Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining into Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show today with a wonderful guest who has a lot of experience with today's topic. So in the world today and in our country today, safety has become something that is a paramount concern. Any place where people gather or congregate, especially in where they live, in multifamily properties, have to deal with security and safety. So our topic today is the safety aspects of multifamily properties. My guest today, joining me in the studio, is Stephanie Graves, co-founder and CEO of Q10 Property Advisors. Thanks for being here, Stephanie.
Thank you. Very important topic.
Yes. So, when we were chatting before we started the show, we were talking about some of the things, some of the elements, I guess, of safety and concerns that management and owners have to have on properties. Some of them, you know, are very easy to identify, like access and gate access and background checks on residents and clearing your vendors to make sure that they're who they say they are, and there's a lot of other ones too that didn't come to mind right away. But let's just jump right in and talk about the first thing when somebody comes to a property is access. Getting into a property, most properties today are fenced in or gated, and they're trying to obviously keep the good people in and the bad people out. So, what has changed? What do you see happening now? What are the issues with that access to the property?
Yeah, well, so, you know, gated communities, I think probably eight in 10 people that visit a property are going to ask about gate systems when they call, right? They're going to say, is the property gated? Does it have limited access? And certainly in the multifamily industry, it's a very slippery slope because we consistently teach our people that we cannot guarantee anyone's safety. It certainly gets you, there's back litigation on this. There's been, you know, kind of precedent set in terms of security at a property and guaranteeing that, or even speaking of having security measures. And so everyone in the multifamily industry, I think, it treats it very delicately. So we do use the term limited access gates rather than security gates or perimeter gates. And we frequently reiterate that the security gates are there as a deterrent. But I think anyone that has had any sort of limited access gate or security gate on their property realizes that it becomes almost a liability as well, because when they're not working, which frequently happens, residents hit them, non-residents hit them, the gate doesn't move fast enough, two people try to go in. We've had incidences where residents have claimed that the gates have hit their car. So there's a liability related to it, and then there's the access. But I think, you know, when residents are looking for that, they're looking for that as an amenity, it almost becomes a necessary item that you have on your property. So ensuring that if you do have access gates, you maintain them the best you can. There's the access gates that let traffic, auto traffic in and out. And then there's also walkthrough gates that you're required to have, not to mention that regulations are required with them, you know, the 911 boxes and the right. fire boxes. And then you have residents that want limited access gates, but decide to prop them open when they walk to the grocery store. Hmm. Kind of defeating the purpose of having right. limited access right. gates. So as a property owner or management personnel, it's important that if you decide to do that, or you have a property that has it, once you have the service or have the amenity, it's important that you maintain it. You can't just say, okay, well, if it's broken, it's broken.
Right.
And so to get at, make sure you're not in that problem, have that issue. Us as a company, and I know several management companies have made the decision that if they're going to have access gates, they have to have some sort of camera associated with it, mm-hmm. that they can, a second line of defense, if you will, to see vehicles coming in and out, to know, because it becomes your word against theirs if they say the gate hit them or if their car got hit by a gate.
Right.
So most properties will have a gate access system along with a camera system that helps. And I do believe that it deters things. We've had experiences where our gates have been broken, and it happens on a weekend. Of course, it always happens Friday night, like when the hot water heaters go out, right, or the boilers, and the gate system is broken for the weekend, and it ends up that we have incidences on property that weekend or people coming into the pool that shouldn't have. So I think from an ownership standpoint, ensuring that you budget to maintain those gates is really important.
Right.
On the operation side as well, it's a pretty archaic system. They haven't had many advances in the gate systems for a long time.
Right.
Many vendors help, but it's still a dial-up system. So, and it's a modem system involved with the computer. So you're still pushing updates if you have card readers or if you have codes. Making sure you don't have one code that everybody has is important. All those are kind of aspects of that security access gate system. But I think nowadays, it's certainly something to think about and make sure that you're budgeting for that in your access system.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, yesterday I was on a large property in Nevada, and they had a I was taking an Uber to get there, and the Uber driver stopped because there was a security gate. There were two security gates, I guess one for the residents who had some kind of access, and the other one looked like there was a guard shack there, but there was nobody in the guard shack. And so I got the Uber driver to go to the residence side, and I, when I was able to see, it was wide open. And I was on the property for a couple hours, and when I left, it was still wide open. So having that there, and like you said, making sure it's maintained, it could have been broken, or it could have been that was their policy to leave it open. I'm not sure. But it is kind of a defeats the purpose of having it if you're not going to maintain it. So I think that's certainly good advice. We were talking a little bit about vendors and vendors on site, and I know there's probably been some issues in the past in the industry with unauthorized vendors or not being who they say they were or whatever. What have you seen with that? What types of things do you do to protect against that?
Sure. I mean, you know, we almost present ourselves in a huge liability position because we have third-party vendors that may come out and do work in people's apartments. And if you don't have some sort of ID for your maintenance team or some sort of identification, truly, I mean, I hate to say this, but anybody can come to the door and knock on the door and say, hey, I'm here to fix your AC. And you hope that the resident is smart enough to say, you know what, this isn't the regular maintenance person that I have in my apartment. I'm going to take a look at it. But communicating that you're going to have a third-party vendor, I've had vendors come on a weekend and not check in the office and just go to the apartment. So you have vendors that you hope are vetted by the third party that you're using. You know, if you hire a plumbing company, ABC Plumbing or whatever, then you hope that they're screening their personnel. But they have access to your residence at some point if you have a third party. So having a procedure in place to where vendors have to check in, or if they're going to go into an occupied apartment, they're going to have somebody go with them. Because certainly I'm no lawyer, but I would bet that there's some degree, you know, arm length liability when you're allowing a third party vendor to come on your property.
Right.
So all of those, I think when we decide to own and manage an apartment community, we don't think of those extra things that come into play when we're allowing people to service our product. It doesn't even have to be an occupied apartment. It can be a vacant apartment.
Right.
You know, there's history of things happening in vacant apartments when you don't secure them. If you're working on a property, maybe doing a yield play, a position, you know, value add, and you've got down units that don't have fully operational doors, maybe boarded up apartments or ones that are vacant. If you have a high vacancy because you're going through some changes, it's important you have a plan in place to monitor those vacant apartments and make sure that they're secure and that you're not providing a place, a shelter for someone to perform bad actions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, yeah. as someone who works within the apartment industry as a supplier, I will go to properties on a frequent basis. And what's interesting to me is some of the management companies, or maybe it's just the on-site practice of that particular team, will, you know, want to know more about you. They'll want a copy of your driver's license before they give you a key to go do something that you're going to go do. And then others, they just say, okay, fine, and they let you go. And you know, I would think that there's probably something to be said for making somebody prove who they are and have a record of who was there. What kind of things have you used in the past as far as with your teams?
Sure. We have visitor badges that vendors check in at the office and get a vendor badge, and we take a copy of their ID. It's something to consistently check when you're on property, because you'll have a vendor that you use repeatedly and the manager thinks that they know him, and, oh, it was, you know, John that came in, he comes in every Tuesday, and that one time they didn't do it, which could pose a liability, right? So when you have practices in place, you got to make sure that they're utilized as well. But so we, vendors come in, they check in, they have contractor badges so that if they're going into an occupied apartment, they're covered. And we, the resident knows that they're from the office, and it has the phone number of the office on top, on the badge, so that they can call and say, hey, I have this guy at my apartment. You know, is he allowed to come here or not? So that's one aspect that we utilize. We have, you know, key log systems where if they're going to get a key to an apartment, they have to leave their driver's license, check it in, check it out. You know, because we are in apartments, there's many access points that could possibly be, you know, non-secured. And so it's important too that residents be conscious. Anybody can come up to my front door when I own a home, just like anybody can come up to an apartment when you enter an apartment. So it's important you educate your residents as well of what that policy is. So, you know, if we send someone to your apartment, they'll have a management shirt on, or they'll have an ID badge on, and go through that process with your resident when they move in.
Okay, great, great. Well, it's a very interesting topic and certainly timely in today's world. We will be back after these messages. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen and Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we are discussing the safety aspects at multifamily properties. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me in the studio is Stephanie Graves, co-founder and CEO of Q10 Property Advisors. And Stephanie, before we got back during the break, we were talking a little bit about the aspects of data and all the data that's collected when someone is leasing an apartment, and the fact that the management company or the office has that data stored somewhere. What type of security discussions and issues are there in the industry about that?
Yeah, it's a really delicate issue with the amount of information that we collect on people. You know, we're collecting pay stubs, we're collecting driver's licenses, social security numbers, we're doing credit checks on individuals, criminal checks on some people. And I remember, you know, 20 years ago when I was in the industry, it wasn't quite what it is now. There wasn't as much online availability. So you would literally collect all of those paper documents, keep them in a file, run the credit history, run the criminal history, and everything was in a paper file somewhere in your office. And there wasn't any blacking out of numbers, or we weren't really as sensitive as we are now about maintaining that information. I remember a story when one of the properties that we had sold a property and moved on, and, you know, had left some the lease files in the past lease files inside of the office. And one of the residents called us about 2 weeks after we left and told us that that she had found all of the lease files in the garbage can in the garbage dumpster. And so the management and ownership that took over actually took those paper files and just dumped them in the garbage can. Mm. And she opened up, you know, she was seeing pay stubs of people and social security numbers and was like, how could this happen? And so it, you know, certainly made me conscious, if you will, of that data is very, I don't think our leasing agents and the on-site teams that are doing it on a day-to-day basis, they kind of become numb to it.
Yes.
That, you know, everything for that person is in there that could, you could steal their identity very easily. So many companies have adopted practices where they run the credit, run the criminal, that stays in an electronic format and is never printed out. And then they view the driver's license and view the social security card, verify it's there, and then don't necessarily keep a copy in the file.
Right.
So we as a company have gone as paperless as possible. But then, of course, that poses other issues, right? I mean, many companies can tell you about data breaches. And so how I think there was an article in the Units magazine, the National Apartment Association magazine, about data breaches. And if your software has a data breach and you're a customer of that software, what's your degree of liability? You know, who pays for that problem to happen?
Right.
Or even just leasing agents or managers leaving that data on their screen as they walk off to show an apartment.
Right.
So certainly ensuring that you have security in place is important. My IT visited a property, was doing some upgrades on one of the computers and sent me a picture of Post-it notes on the monitor with the passwords.
Oh my.
And he was like, please ensure this does not happen on any other property or, you know, under the keyboard.
Yeah.
So we try to maintain and we try to utilize password protection devices at all costs. But, you know, people cannot stand having 19 different passwords. And
right.
That's kind of what you have at this point. So we try as much as we can to ensure that data is secure. When we send passwords or we send information, we send it to a personal email instead of a work email so that it's, you know, so you're not getting the work email password at the same email that you utilize.
Right.
But certainly it's people, right? I say frequently property management would be easy if there was no people management involved. But making sure that the people understand that data is sacred. So again, social security numbers, it's easy to walk into an office and open up a file and see information that we probably shouldn't see.
Right.
So finding some practices and ensuring you get some assistance. And I say all the time, when we get in our little bubbles of operation on a day-to-day basis, this industry is large enough that you have somebody that you can trust. Have somebody outside of your organization come in and kind of take a look at what you're doing and can offer some input as to, you know, this isn't what we do. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could try something else. And shows like this certainly are a great way to kind of get information from other entities on what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. Internet security is important. Open networks, mm-hmm. Wi-Fi throughout the community where you have an open network. Make sure that you have a separate network for your office, which has your data on it, and a separate network for your guests mm-hmm. so that they're not logging in to your office password, your office
right.
internet.
Right.
I don't know how to breach that, but there certainly are people that do know how. And so just creating those extra levels of security are important. Something, you know, maybe nothing ever happens, but if you make a valid effort to try to limit the access to the data, it certainly, you know, shows well if it comes down to it.
Okay. And you know, you'd mentioned the background checks and criminal background credit checks and so forth. What is it that, you're obviously concerned about the security and the safety of your on-site team, as well as the other residents.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is it that turns up, and what do you end up doing about that?
Sure. Yeah. So, some companies will look at the credit and the criminal separately, and then make a determination. Maybe the supervisor, the manager, does that. There's lots of systems now that have a red light, green light system, where the person running the report doesn't necessarily have access to all of the data. You set parameters as to what's acceptable and not. I'm not going to accept felonies under 5 years. I'm not going to accept, bad credit history, bad criminal history. You kind of set those parameters with the provider, and then they screen it and grade it and tell you if it passes muster or not.
Right.
And so having those in place, I think, limits that amount of information that is given to the on-site staff, which is a good thing.
Yes.
And then, you know, if there's maybe an approved with conditions that's on the borderline that you want to make a high deposit for or something like that, then that's a manager option that you would log into a system to get the data that you need. With our company, We have a red light, green light, yellow light system. And if they have a yellow light, then the supervisor will go in and look at the information and decide if we're going to do a double deposit, maybe if we're going to have other stringent requirements. But the on-site team is limited with the amount of information they see, because you see felonies, courthouses, any delinquent data that they have. When the resident gives you authorization to run their credit and criminal, you'll get all of that data.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be a 19-page report.
And then there are certain rules, I think, that you have to notify the prospective resident as to what was found, if you're turning them down, or why you are changing the rules for them. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, certainly very important, because some credit agencies that you may run through will automatically send that letter to the resident saying you were declined based on something we found on your credit and criminal history. Some companies don't send out that letter for you, and the management company has to do it themselves. You're required to send out those forms. So it's important you kind of do some research and figure out if your company is sending it out. And sometimes they won't necessarily tell you. You think that you're agreeing to something, you don't know. So I would specifically ask the question. I can't think of the name of the term, but it's an altered action letter or something to that effect. Make sure that they are sending that report out for you, that you don't have that responsibility of sending it out. They'll send it out automatically. The resident gets it, and they've already approved that you can run their credit and criminal. Because when the on-site team is responsible for sending it out, sometimes that, you know, is not first of mind.
Right. And does that happen relatively quickly from the time they apply?
It does, yeah. So it needs to come out within, I think it's 48 hours of running their credit and criminal. So it needs to come out pretty quickly. If you're going to make an altered decision, so if I'm going to say, no, I'm going to offer you an extra deposit or make an exception, then obviously that deferred action letter will be a little different. But they're entitled to get a copy of their credit report after that screening is done, to find out what was the issue that made them not get approved for the apartment.
Okay. And so then, and we only have a couple of minutes, but sure. But I know there's stories out there about people who passed those, jumped through those hoops and passed, but yet when they get there, there could be an incident, something that didn't show up there. And so your on-site team has got to be able to deal with that when that happens. How do you train them? What do you tell them?
So we try to limit the amount of information that our on-site team gives the client, just because, an example, you know, if you have a client that's come in and you've run their credit history and you find out that they have gotten, you know, two DWIs and they have two background history of beating up their neighbor and maybe a felony assault charge. Not exactly the type of person you would want to confront in your office and tell them that they're declined because they've got felony charges for beating up their neighbor.
Exactly.
Right? So that's one of the reasons why we limit the information given to the on-site team. And they just say, we have a third party that screens you and gives us this information. So I don't know the exact reason. You just didn't meet our qualifying criteria. Mm-hmm. And so having a good qualifying criteria that you give to them at application, so that does most of the work for you, is really important. And then you can kind of refer back to that. I tell my team, never quote the qualifying criteria. Just tell them they can have a copy of it.
Right.
You know, if someone says, well, do I get approved for this? You know what? Read the qualifying criteria that you're going to sign. And if you still want to apply after reading it, we encourage you to do so. Because you certainly don't want to get yourself in a situation where you're saying something that isn't necessarily true. And then you have to, you know, back into why they were declined. So rental history is a big one that we don't necessarily catch all the time. Mm-hmm. Because if we're doing a manual rental history, we're emailing or calling or faxing over the previous apartments, and they tend to maybe not get that information back as quickly as possible.
Right.
So that screening process also involves a rental history check.
Yeah.
And if that comes back negative, obviously we say your rental history didn't come back great. And then we don't want them to go to the previous landlord and say, why did you tell them something bad about me?
Everybody in the industry, when it comes to that rental history, do they all work together to make sure that you get the information that you need? And of course, people are contacting your company to get information.
Sure. I mean, we try to be as accommodating as possible, but there tend to be delays. You know, when your resident is moving out, it's not as important as one moving in.
Exactly. Okay. Well, look, I just want to remind everybody that you can check out our show, have suggestions for topics and guests by going to our website at multifamilyradio.com. We're going to be back after this break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters. Thank you.
multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Well, we're back and you're listening to Multifamily Matters. Today, we are discussing the safety and security aspects of multifamily properties. I'm Paul Marks, your host, and with me in the studio is Stephanie Graves, co-founder and CEO of Q10 Property Advisors. Stephanie, we kind of were talking about background checks and so forth, but one thing that we didn't have time to talk about was unauthorized occupancy. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the things that can occur there and that people have to be aware of.
Sure. I mean, a good security process and a good screening process is important, but you can't guarantee that your occupants or your leaseholders are going to disclose every individual in their house, which is unfortunate. But so the idea is that anybody that would be over 18 would be a leaseholder, and any leaseholder is screened through the process. Anybody under 18 would be listed as an occupant, and they would not be screened. So many times we'll see places where, because they don't want somebody screened, they'll say, oh, well, my uncle's living with me, but I don't want him responsible for the rent, so just put him as an occupant. So it's important you have a really good process in place and a policy that anybody over 18 is screened, and they are technically responsible for that lease if something were to happen, and that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll have people that apply, two people apply. One person's denied because they have criminal history. So the other person says, well, I'm just going to move in by myself. So as a, you know, as a leasing agent, you don't want to say, well, I don't believe you.
Right.
Right. Like, why, what do you mean you're not going to move in? That's your boyfriend, right? Oh, no, we broke up. So, you know, it puts us in an uncomfortable position. How do you make that judgment call? Training your people on how to deal with that's, you know, really important. Do you believe them? Do you not believe them? And then at that point, let's say someone moves in, you buy their story, and then you find out that there's an unauthorized occupant in the apartment. That's important that we pay attention to those things because we have not run credit and criminal on those individuals. So when someone calls or says, hey, you know, what's your screening process? We say we screen all of our applicants equally. We put them to credit and criminal, but that doesn't mean that we necessarily know everybody in your apartment. So if you see 15 people in the apartment next to you, it's important mm-hmm. you tell us because we wouldn't allow them to be on a lease. One of the practices we do, which doesn't catch all of it by any means, but on a monthly closeout process, it's when you close out your books for the month, we do a registered sexual offender database search. So in Texas, there is a registered, you know, sex offender database. So mm-hmm. we run that on our properties and our addresses every month to ensure that no one has claimed that they live at our property, but maybe we don't know about because they are registered. They are required to register where they live.
Right.
So, and I would say we probably catch one a year.
Wow.
That claims a property that we live on. And when that occurs, our process is we give them a 24-hour notice to vacate because they have an unauthorized occupant that has a criminal history on the property. And we get many, many stories. And, you know, as much as we are human and we feel like I know your story and it wasn't your fault, mm-hmm. you know, there's a policy in place and we have to try to, you know, lease to the masses as much as possible. So ensuring that you're doing that on a regular basis. Another idea is you know, we do criminal checks on people that are new move-ins. But if you take over a property and you take over their files, you're assuming that they were screened at some point. If you're doing maybe a demographic change on the property and you're doing some upgrades and kind of want to move around the clientele, you may decide to screen all of your applicants at move-in and at renewal.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is okay as long as you make those decisions based on everyone and not limiting certain people. Like, oh, only the people that pay late get screened. No, everyone will get screened at renewal because we want to make sure that you qualify at this point.
Yeah.
So those are additional security measures you could put in effect to know who's on your property.
So even if a resident has been a good resident, they've been paying on time and there's been no issues, some people put into practice that they will rescreen them both criminally and credit for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I guess if you pick something up that's concerning, you have an opportunity to deal with it at that time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's good and bad, right?
Right.
Maybe if they have been a good resident, maybe you don't know. But if you've just taken over the property, maybe you don't know what you're getting into.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So talking about, I guess, when you know, one of the major aspects of the multifamily industry is leasing. Mm-hmm. And in order to lease the property, you have to take the prospective resident on a tour. Mm-hmm. So what are the security measures for touring a property when you don't know the person, when you maybe on a weekend, when you're short-staffed, what kind of things can be put in place to help make it more secure?
Sure. It's certainly a vulnerable time. You know, when you truly think about it and put it into understanding, you're taking a stranger into an apartment with you by yourself, a vacant apartment. And so you're leaving the safety of your office where you have some backup into an apartment by yourself, and they truly are a stranger. You've talked to them for 5 minutes at the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think frequently the on-site teams kind of forget about that, and they're just, you know, whoa, hi, good to meet you. Let's go, John. And go into an apartment. So collecting IDs when they walk in and they're going to go on a tour, having a sign that says we collect identification from every person on the property. Our properties have a strict policy that every individual that's going to go into the apartment to tour has to have an ID.
Mm-hmm.
We collect those government issued IDs and we leave them in the office while they go on the tour. And then when we return, obviously they get them back. So that way we have some sort of follow-up. And then if they don't have an ID, then they don't go to the apartment.
Right.
It's kind of as simple as that. But then once they go into the apartment, it's important that our on-site personnel is conscious about where they are in the apartment. You know, don't walk into a closet and say, oh, wow, look how big the closet is, you know, and put yourself in a vulnerable position. And I see that frequently with leasing agents because they forget.
Right.
They do this on a day-to-day basis. They think they're everybody's friend and it's, you know, they're salespeople.
Yeah.
So they put themselves in vulnerable situations and, you know, thank goodness that we haven't had any issues, but I know that there has been issues before where you walk into an apartment, even walking vacants, and there's a homeless person inside of your apartments. So being equipped with, a walkie talkie or a cell phone or when I walk property, no matter what it is, I have, you know, either a razor blade with me or a taser with me, because you never know what you're going to walk into and you certainly don't want to put yourself in the vulnerable position. It's a crazy world sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you that a few weeks ago I was on a property and I was going to look at some vacants and the leasing person was taking me around to show me. And we went to a property, I guess it was a C property, C class property. And as we were walking up to go into this one vacant unit, the blinds were up about 12 inches and she could see a bunch of possessions and stuff that shouldn't be there in a vacant unit. So she stopped short. I almost ran into her because I was walking behind her and I said, what's wrong? And she said, there's somebody is in this unit or has been in this unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so she immediately called on her walkie talkie and got one of the maintenance people over there and they went in together, which was a very prudent thing to do.
Absolutely.
And luckily there was nobody in there, but obviously someone had gained access to it somehow and was living there. It was on the back side of the property where probably they don't get to on quite a frequent basis. Let's talk a little bit about key fobs.
Okay.
Tell me what's going on with that. There's all kinds of technology that's out there today on access to the individual doors of the units. And we only have a few minutes to talk about it. We can pick it up in the next segment too. But what have you been using? What do you know that's out there and what can they do?
Yeah, the A-class product is kind of been on the high end of this, where they have different access, you know, key fobs or different keys. You know, the smaller end of it is there's key systems now, smart keys, where you can change them with a different key. So you don't need high-tech materials to change the keys. Recently, we've started using a Schlage system. I know there's other ones out there that has an app and key fob entries into the apartments, so that you can monitor and you can give access during limited amounts of time. So you'd say, you know, if there's an emergency on call, the key fob for the maintenance team will not work on any of the apartments after hours. It'll only work on the ones we give him access to. So if he has an emergency call, he calls the manager. The manager can give him access to apartment 201 where the AC's out. And that way it kind of limits, for us, it limits the liability of, we know that maintenance doesn't have access to your apartment during those hours. So we know that he didn't come in because he didn't have access. And that's really helped us a great deal with the logging process. The residents have access and they can apply for an app. They can pay an additional fee a month for an app so that they can see who's entering and exiting their apartment. So great for, you know, kids coming home at 3:30, latchkey kids, right? That the mom wants to know what time they really came in and what time they left and who accesses the door. And it'll give you a printout of who's entering, what key fob's entering, if maintenance went in and what time maintenance went out. You can set alerts to tell you if something's happened. And with the new camera systems and the cameras that you can put at your front door, all of those are kind of additional security measures that a resident can put in effect, or the on-site team can. In our instance, we have it with all the amenities. We have it with all of the, as we upgrade apartments, we add these to them. And it's really helped the residents love it. It's a B-class product, so they're not really, I don't want to say they're not used to it, but it's not something they've had before. So they really think it's kind of a luxury item for them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess the locks themselves have some type of wireless communication to be able to gather all this data.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily inexpensive. So some property classes can afford it and others might have to budget it or get it as part of a renovation.
Yeah, and I would say budgeting for a camera system is about the same as budgeting for the keyless key fob system.
As far as the same cost.
Yeah, I mean, you know, about $10,000 across the board for an average size property is what you're looking at to make sure it happens. But if you market it the right way, you can probably gain some of that back over, you know, a couple of years in terms of getting some of that money back on a monthly ancillary income basis.
Yeah, so they're willing to pay more for this.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's great.
Well, we're going to take a break. Before we do, I'd want to let everyone know who's listening that Multifamily Matters is brought to you by some of our exclusive sponsors, which is EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S., WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management, and Ted W. Allen and Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. We will be back after these short commercials. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. EconServe has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call EconServe today at 713-662-3220. for a free analysis of your property. That's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Welcome back. This is Multifamily Matters, and I'm Paul Marks, your host. Joining me in the studio today is Stephanie Graves, co-founder and CEO of Q10 Property Advisors. And our topic today is safety and security aspects at multifamily properties. We're going into our last segment here, and there's lots of things that we've covered and quite a few more that we haven't. One of the things that we want to talk about is that I wanted to ask you about is there's several security companies out there that offer video surveillance services. They offer security access as far as guard access, monitoring the properties. Where do you see that in today's times? That can be very expensive, I would imagine, to have somebody, and would probably take a certain type of property to warrant that. What have you found with that type of thing?
Yeah, in one of the earlier segments, we talked about not guaranteeing people's security, mm-hmm. right? And so one of the things, if you do offer a security service, is we call it a patrol service, and that they're patrolling the grounds to protect the asset, not necessarily to protect the individual.
Right.
It's hard to tell a resident that, right, that you've got security that protects the apartments. but courtesy officers are a good avenue. Many mm-hmm. communities can have a courtesy officer where they offer them a free rent or a rental discount for patrolling the property, or hiring a third party to come in, either a commissioned officer, which would be with a firearm, or a non-commissioned officer.
Right.
Both are options. Another option is to hire the local jurisdiction. A lot of Houston PD, Pasadena PD, their alternate jobs, and to supplement their income, they do apartment work.
Mm-hmm.
And we've hired several and gone through that process. I think it's... depending on what your issues are and why you think it's important, it is a heavy price to pay. I mean,
right.
you're paying a heavy premium to get them on your property. And then what happens when this has always been a delicate situation? We had a property in one of the local jurisdictions, and we hired the local PD, and then it got to be so expensive that we couldn't afford it anymore. And not that it wasn't working, but it was. But then you have to terminate them. And now the people that you've terminated from a job, or you say, hey, this is only a 6-month deal, are the people that are supposed to patrol your property normally.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on that relationship, it could be kind of uncomfortable.
Right.
So then we found that they weren't coming to your property as much as they needed to, and they were kind of ignoring calls. And yes, you can report it, but how does that work? Or the local PD will get upset because they're not getting the extra work. You're giving it to other security officers. So mm-hmm. all of those things, come into play. Most communities have a PIP organization, a PIP group that meets once a month, that'll have security officers in that area, or police in that area, that kind of help with certain issues. The local apartment association with the HPD has a Blue Star program
mm-hmm.
that you work to get your properties Blue Star certified, and you have certain security guidelines that you agree to comply with. Those are great programs if you're in Houston proper. The only struggle is that it belongs to the person that attended, which means the manager. So if you have a manager and then they are not working with you anymore, your Blue Star certification training goes with them.
I see.
So you need to get in when the new manager comes in, you got to go through that process again. So all things to consider, but to be conscious of when you're thinking about that security aspect of it. You mentioned the gate. Mm-hmm. I mean, the little guard station.
Right.
Lots of properties, in the 80s built these guard stations, and then they realized that, what's happening? I'm paying for this guard. Are they really doing it? The residents are mad. Having a guard station at the front that's empty has a completely different effect than one that has someone in it.
Right.
As you talked about. So all things to consider. Are you going to eliminate the guard station, or are you going to have somebody just patrol there that's a non-commissioned kind of guard?
Mm-hmm.
We have an agreement that we sign with our courtesy officers as well as our police department that says these are the things that we require you to do, deliver a light check once a month, deliver a daily report. And we have them sign it at the beginning of their employment with us so that we at least have some sort of agreement on what their duties are.
Mm-hmm.
Because, ideally they're patrolling the property when your people are from the office are not there. So who's going to guarantee that they're going by and doing what they need to do?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked mentioned a couple of times during the show, the class of a property. It really doesn't matter what the class is. There can be incidents at any property.
Yes. I mean, crime happens everywhere.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's kind of what we tell our residents. Crime happens everywhere. We're in the city of Houston. It's important that you, and that's a key, you know, when a resident comes in or a client comes in and says, you know, is your property safe? It's important that you train your people right. I sometimes when I'm training leasing classes, I hear the leasing agent say, well, I just tell them to come by at night. And if they see something happening, then they know that it's, you know, then they know. And I'm like, yikes, like, have you been here at 10 o'clock at night?
Right.
You know what I mean? Do you want to send somebody you don't know to your property at 10 o'clock at night? It's not a matter of whether they see something or not, but what if something does happen?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, and there's certain pockets of town that have a high crime area, but not necessarily your block.
Right.
So I think the most important thing to consider is risk mitigation. You mm-hmm. know, be aware of what your property is doing. Talk to the local police officers. Screen your residents as much as possible. Have resident involvement so that they feel comfortable coming to you if they see something. You know, if someone's breaking into the pool at 2 o'clock in the morning and none of your residents are doing anything because they don't want to be involved, that's not really the community that you want to create.
Right.
So create an environment that allows them to speak to you. We had a property that we took over that had several incidences over the first 4 months that we had it. And we ended up having, you know, commissioned officers that were working, and they came in and we had a community meeting, a town hall, if you will, because we had people that, you know, were getting held up in the middle of the night. And we were lighting it up. We were doing everything we could, but it's in a vulnerable area.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that was delivered is that we provide, you know, patrol service. We provide gated access, but it's only as good, you know, this is your community. And if you see something happening or you see someone, you know, gathering outside in the parking lot, you've got to say something because we're not here.
Right.
And you live here and it's your responsibility to make this a community. So working as a management and ownership team, delivering that message, I think is really important. Don't avoid the residents.
Right.
Don't be like, oh, I don't want them to complain or tell me what they need. You know, kind of embrace it. It may require you to do some extra work, but long term, it's going to save you on turns. It's going to save you on you know, opportunity costs. In saying that, you know, we talked a little bit about what do you do
when you have an incident?
Yeah. I mean, what do you do? You know, we had several incidences at a property, and you know, our policy is if something happens and there's a police report and it's brought to our knowledge, we send out a notice to every resident. And we say, last night at 10 o'clock, we were informed of a holdup in the you know, garden area. It was a white male with a long trench coat, whatever the situation is. You know, we don't have further details on it, but if you have any information that, you know, lets us know about this, then we have an anonymous helpline and kind of go about that way to get as much information. Mm-hmm. And then we reiterate that, you know, there are security guidelines. Most people in Houston, I think, are on the Texas Apartment Association lease or the NAA lease. And so there are certain security requirements as an owner that we're required to do. Keyless entry, the window locks, a peephole, making sure that you comply with those security guidelines and then reminding people that security is their responsibility.
Right.
You know, if they're at Walmart and their car gets broken into, Walmart's not going to do anything about it.
Right.
But when they're at their property and their car gets broken into, they expect owners and management to replace that, fix their door.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference.
Right.
And it's hard to get the residents to understand that. But getting a good move-in process where you go over those and say, safety is your responsibility. Don't leave a computer in your car. Don't leave your car unlocked. Be aware of your surroundings. All important. But having a policy in place to notify residents if something happens is imperative. Because there is litigation and there is back history in the courts where owners have been responsible when they did not inform someone of an incident and another incident happened. And it's millions of dollars that the owners were fined mm-hmm. for not notifying of an incident that happened on a property.
So you'd said when you're made aware of a problem. So obviously, if it happens in the middle of the night and the manager's not on site, there's no one on site, you're really kind of depending on someone to come into the office and say, we had an incident last night. And I guess in most cases, they probably would.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you tell your staff to do as far as trying to get more details on it? If there's a police report, do they try and get a copy of that report? And mm-hmm. how do they handle that?
Yeah, we have a, you know, kind of a crime-related notebook that we keep on property. And we get We try to get instant reports from every individual involved. And so that way when they come in and say, you know, this happened to me, I had a gun put to my side or whatever, and they stole all my money, we say, can we get a statement from you on what happened? And, you know, then if you have cameras on property, it gets even more complicated, right? Because you got to figure out, do we have camera footage of it? Do we not? So making sure that every individual, and if you have any witnesses, and sending out those notices lets people know that an incident happened. One, because we want them to be aware, and two is if they have any information that we can, you know, find on that individual. You know, we do offer rewards, and we evict people if we find out that they're involved in any sort of crime. We have kind of a zero tolerance policy.
Right. So let's say, just hypothetically, a manager gets to a property, opens up at 9 o'clock in the morning. Someone comes by the office when they open it and says, so-and-so was robbed, or we were robbed. What's the time frame as far as when those notices would go out, or what do you recommend?
Yeah, we try to notify. I would recommend 24 hours.
Okay.
I mean, I would try to send out a notice within 24 hours. If you have a good relationship with your attorney too, they should give you kind of a shell you can work with.
Yeah.
We had our attorney kind of put up a shell that we could use, and we kind of fill in the blanks. So you have a standard procedure. You don't want to claim responsibility, but you want to be empathetic, right? All those mm-hmm. key things that are important. But I would get out a notice within 24 hours of any incident that happens. And, you know, not give too many details, but at least notify the residents. Again, there's some liability there.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so the on-site team is gathering details mm-hmm. for their file, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily release those, all the details.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, get the police involved if you can.
Yeah.
Find out who the officer was that was there. There's a gentleman, his name is Ron, and he's a LinkedIn contact that does some risk mitigation, which we'll get mm-hmm. you in contact with him. He might be a good person to have on the show. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an article that sparked my interest called I'm sorry, landlord, but you do not get your first murder for free. And it basically talked about that risk aspect of what we do.
Right.
If you buy a community that's in a high crime area, you have to believe that there's some vulnerability on your end.
Right.
And ignoring the problem doesn't make you not liable for that. So being aware of, you know, the cheapest security you can have is lighting.
Mm-hmm.
A dark property where people can mull around is never a good situation.
Right.
So if you can do anything, pay for lighting. Pay to get that done so that at least the property is lit up so that if something happens, you can see it and people are deterred.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess cameras at some point in time is also helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it's a liability and a risk because then, you know, are the cameras operational when it happens?
Right.
Are you made aware of it in time to get the film? We've had things happen where the police have contacted us and said, hey, you have cameras. Let us have copies of what happened at this time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. So much more to talk about. Stephanie, let people know how they can get in touch with you if they have some questions or would like to talk to you about managing a property.
Sure. My name is Stephanie Graves. I'm with Q10 Property Advisors. Our website is Q10PA. That's propertyadvisors.com. My email address is Stephanie@Q10PA.com. And we're a third-party management consulting and training firm in the Houston and Texas area.
Well, thanks so much for being here today. I want to also remind our listeners that if you'd like to find out more about our show, listen to any archived episode, or give suggestions for guests and topics, you can go to www.multifamilyradio.com. We will be back next Friday and each and every Friday at 10 a.m. right here on 1110 KTEK with another great topic and power panel of guests. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.